At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Thursday morning, January 16th, 2020. Beating the Book podcast with Gil Alexander. Megapod for championship week. Just two games, NFC Championship preceded by the AFC Championship. And as always, we have the regulars from Circa Sports, the consigliere to Derek Stevens, and of course also the vice president of operations by official title. It's Michael Palm. What's happening, Mike?
Good morning, Gil. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm going to go through these games that happened last week because a couple of them anyway were unbelievable. And of course, Todd Wishnev from the Showtime docuseries Action. What's happening, Toddy?
Hey.
And our rotating guest back on the show for a playoff run. We wanted to have him here last week, but his podcast partner had a death in the family, so he was unable to join us, but he's here this week. He hosts the Lombardi Line Saturday and Sunday morning at VSiN, along with Patrick Maher, 6 to 9 Pacific, 9 to noon Eastern every Saturday and Sunday morning. Has his own podcast called The GM Shuffle with Adnan Virk. Writes for The Athletic, and of course, the book is Gridiron Genius. It's our buddy Michael Lombardi. What's happening, Michael?
Not much, Gil. Good to be here. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Hello, everyone.
Hello, sir. We are happy to have you. I was saving you for the playoffs, for a return appearance on the playoffs, in the playoffs, so I'm glad you're here. Let's begin, guys, because I don't think it's going to take very long. Two games, the winners of which, of course, advanced to Super Bowl 54 2 weeks down the road. Next week, by the way, it's our Vegas Lifestyle podcast. And then the week after that, our Super Bowl props, Super Bowl preview show. But as far as the championship games, first one is the AFC Championship between the Tennessee Titans and the Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City right now, 7-point favorites with extra juice. That's the consensus. 7 minus 120, somewhere in that pocket. Always shop around because these lines will vary. The total's at 53. The Titans are here by virtue of their win, of course, over the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens become just the sixth team in the modern age to go 14-2 or better in the regular season than 1-done in the playoffs. They do it with another, if you look at the box score, another ho-hum performance from their quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. Only 88 yards passing. It was 72 the week before when the Titans beat the Patriots. But they don't need that kind of yardage when Derrick Henry's going 30 for 195, which is what he did against the Ravens. Also threw a touchdown pass on the jump pass. In that game, just an unbelievable performance by Henry, but really it came down to high-leverage moments. Tannehill had his chances. He made the most of them. His two touchdown passes also had one on the ground, plus three in turnovers for the Titans as well. And the biggest stat of the game, the Ravens, 0 for 4 on fourth downs. Huge. They're playing the Chiefs. The Chiefs, by an even more unbelievable turn of events in Kansas City, Houston up, as we all watch, 24-0. Kansas City dropping a couple third down conversions, a muffed punt. And then at 21-0, Bill O'Brien decides to kick a field goal. He changes his mind. It goes to 24-0. That seemed to change everything on that moment. Mecole Hardman with a great kickoff return that led to the first Kansas City touchdown, 24-7. Then a fake punt that went askance. for the Chiefs, ends up not converting, short field, 24-14, ensuing kickoff, fumble. Next thing you know, it's 24-21, and then 28-24 by the end of the half. Chiefs win it going away. Michael, we start with you. Again, Kansas City favored by 7. Your thoughts, sir, on the AFC Championship?
You know, I think when you go back and watch the game in Week 10 and really break it down, you really have a hard time understanding how Tennessee won the game. They had the ball 22 minutes. Kansas City was 7-for-14 on third down. They got Kansas City in a lot of third downs. They really never stopped Kansas City. And it took a lot of unusual events to occur at the end of the game with 4 minutes to go. They come down. They got a 3rd-and-4 that they don't convert. They kick the field goal. Tennessee gets the ball back again, gets into a 4th-and-17, can't convert that. Chiefs are in prime position and then all of a sudden Mahomes, instead of laying down, takes a sack that moves the ball 9 yards back. Bad snap. Now we get grounding because the field goal kicker threw it out of bounds. And then Tennessee comes down. They leave 23 seconds left on the clock, just enough time to try a 52-yarder that gets blocked. I mean, when you watch the game, you say to yourself, how is this game even close? They really never stopped. I mean, I know they gained 500 yards, but they never really stopped Kansas City. They made Kansas City punt one time in the game, and really they could have done anything they wanted to Kansas City to Tennessee the whole day. The thing that I get from the game, most importantly, and I think this reflects to the Baltimore game last week, even though Tennessee was down by 9 in the third quarter, they never changed who they were. They kept doing what they did because they're married to it. They can't run drop back passes. Their offensive line can't pass protect. So they stayed with their run. They stayed with their play action. Tannehill made some plays with his feet, and they got themselves the lead in the game, and their defense made just enough plays on 3rd-and-2 like they have in the playoffs to convert. Can they duplicate this is the question, and can they duplicate it to where they can? And I'm having a hard time seeing it. I know they're playing better than they did then, but the Chiefs are playing better as well. Chris Jones is on the field for this game, so we understand that. But I think the reality of this game is, can they cover the Chiefs well enough and play good enough defense to keep this game where it won't get away from them? And that's where I'm having a hard time.
Sounds like you lay the points. Is that true, or am I saying too much there?
It's Thursday. Chris Jones, if he doesn't play, and he didn't practice today, and there's a good chance he probably doesn't play. But he played in the last one. If he doesn't play, I'm definitely taking the Titans and the points. I don't think they'll win, but I'm taking the Titans and the points.
Mike Palm from Circus Sports. A couple other things about this past weekend. One, Bill O'Brien, not only the change of mind on 4th-and-1, where he elects to go for a field goal to make it 24-0.
He didn't change his mind on that, just so we're clear on this. I mean, he thought it was a first down. He thought it was a first down, so he was sending out the next play. He didn't change his mind.
I stand corrected.
He thought it was 1st-and-10, and so he sent out that group. And then when he realized it was 4th down, he was going to take the points. And you certainly are entitled to criticize for taking the points. There's no doubt. I'm not saying that. But I don't think my point to you is he didn't change his mind. They basically let him think it was 1st down.
I stand corrected on that. I'll tell you where he did change his mind, though. Texans were down 17 with just over 11 minutes to play, and it looked like the Texans were going to punt the football. And then Bill O'Brien changed his mind. So,
no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly a change of mind late in the game, and that was very O'Brien-esque, peculiar at the end of that game. Mike Palm, your thoughts. Kansas City favored by 7, total 53.
Yeah, Gil. I want to go back to the first game as well.
Please.
That Michael referenced in Week 10. I mean, he's right. They never stopped Kansas City. They outgained them 530-371. In addition to all the hijinks in the last 5 minutes of that game, let's not forget Rashawn Evans had a 53-yard fumble recovery return for a touchdown that was one of Tennessee's scores. You know, Tannehill only threw the ball 19 times in that game as well, not unlike what they've asked him to do in the playoffs here. I just don't think that Tennessee is going to be able to slow down Kansas City. I think the fact that Kansas City lost this game in Week 10 will get them out to a better start than they had against Houston. They'll be more focused. You can't lose another title game, Andy Reid. You know, I don't think they're going to be tight at home because of the big comeback that they had last weekend against the Texans. I'm gonna lay the 7 points here with Kansas City and feel pretty comfortable about it.
Just to jog people's memory about that game, that was Week 10, Tennessee 35, Kansas City 32, as the guys have alluded to. Tannehill throws a 23-yarder to Adam Humphries with 23 seconds left. Joshua Kalu blocked a last-second field goal attempt, 52-yarder, to get that final score of 35-32. That was the game that Mahomes was coming off the knee injury. It was his first game back. And the Titans only had a chance after a bad snap by the Chiefs on Harrison Butker's fifth field goal attempt of the day. Kansas City coach Andy Reid blamed the communication for the snap, taking holder Dustin Colquitt by surprise. He threw the ball away in desperation for intentional grounding. That set the Titans up at their own 39, and that's when they matriculated.
Gil, one quick question. I just want to ask Mike Palm this, who's an expert on officials. Do we realize that Corenti officiated this game in Nashville the last time, Mike?
Yeah, we realize it. And I want to ask you this. Does Tony Corenti have pictures of River on with Goodell's wife? How is he getting this game again? Michael, he's embarrassing. Not only was he horrible in the wild card game in Houston, 4 weeks earlier on Sunday Night Football, there was confusion on every play with his crew when the Patriots were down there. I mean, he can't do it anymore. He was fired as a supervisor official to the Pac-12 6 years ago. His career has deteriorated. He's not the official he was 15 years ago. I don't get it, Michael.
You know, I don't either. And I think when you really watch the tape of this game, he had a huge influence on Kansas City's slow start. I mean, Kansas City turns the ball over early, and it's 7-0, and they get all of a sudden they got 1st and 10. They think they score, and there's just repeated. There's an offensive pass interference call. There's a holding call. I mean, that's why it was 10-0 early instead of being 14-0 early. He called 17 penalties in this last game. So, you know, and he's going to be, his influence is going to be in this game. And if you take the Titans and the points, prepare yourself for that.
Todd, one last thing about the Chiefs last week. And I mentioned this with Michael on Tuesday when he was on a numbers game at VSiN on Sirius XM 204. I mentioned it on Monday when I was doing the autopsy of this game. But there was that moment as Kansas City, and I had it in game on Kansas City when they were down 14-0 at minus 141. I did it again at minus 120. Didn't do it until it got to 24-7 after that. And then it was plus 167. So I missed the best bang for your buck. But still, I never had a doubt that Kansas City would win. But it's 24-21. It's 1st and goal at the 5 with 58 seconds left in the first half. And at that point, if you're Andy Reid, the correct game theory thing to do, right, is to at least incorporate a run to bleed the clock so that if and when Kansas City scores, Houston will have as little time as possible to operate with at the end of the first half. Instead, pass, pass, pass. They do get the touchdown to make it 28-24 on the Mahomes to Kelsey touchdown, but only 20 seconds elapses, and Houston does matriculate the ball down the field. They do get a field goal attempt. It doesn't go in. They don't convert it, but it's those little moments that do give me just a little pause about Andy Reid in these moments in the playoffs, and I'm just curious if you thought the same.
You know, of course you have to worry about Andy Reid. He's a genius schemer, but has had situational issues in the past, so you always have to think about that, but I don't think it's going to be a factor this week. I think Kansas City is a much better team. By the way, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but the last 7 games since that Tennessee game, Kansas City has not only won the game, but has covered the spread. 7 games in a row in the National Football League to cover the spread is really remarkable. I mean, we know how tight the NFL lines are, and to cover 7 in a row, you know, it doesn't happen often, let's put it that way. Now, if you remember, the previous game was the first game with Mahomes back after they had that Minnesota game where Matt Moore was in. And then, of course, Mahomes comes back. He was rusty. And even with the rust, as you guys have all mentioned a million times here, in the fourth quarter, they're up by 9, really should be up 16 because of the Tennessee. One of the touchdowns was a fumble. It's 29-20 with 11:54 to go in that game in the fourth quarter. This there's no way Kansas City should lose this game. Now, they were at Tennessee and some weird hijinks happened, and that's what happened. But it's not going to happen in Kansas City, I don't think. And I think it could be curtains for Tennessee. I would lean Kansas City. And usually we see in the championship games, for point spread purposes, the favorites usually do very, very well in the championship games, if I remember correctly. Gil, can I just ask one quick question to Mike? Because I've been dying to ask him this the whole time.
Please.
Mike, you know how teams have third down and 15 packages and they throw the ball, you know, they bring in their dime package, they throw the ball underneath, the team gets 12 yards, it's fourth down, everybody puts their hand up, fourth down, and they punt the ball, right? That's usually when when the other team is in their own side of the field. So, of course, let's say you're at your own 20, you throw a little 12-yard pass, you punt the ball. But when they're at the 50-yard line and it's third and 15, it seems to me they're in the same dime package and they give up a 12-yard pass to the 38. They all get excited that it's fourth down. They put their fist up in the air, fourth down, and they don't realize, oh, well, the team's going to go for it because now it's only fourth and three from the 35. Do teams have different packages for third and 15, whether they're the other team's at midfield versus whether the other team's all the way deep in their own end?
Yeah, no doubt they do. I mean, they have, you know, they have a line, and usually you determine that line in pregame warm-up when you watch the opposing field goal kicker, you know, kick. And so the defense coordinator knows that, you know, if any time the ball is on the 38 or in, they can make this field goal. So, you know, that's the point territory we have to do. The quarterback needs to know it too, because if he takes a sack at any point on the field at that area, they're losing points. And if he gets outside there. So, yeah, it's pretty much communicated and it's talked about. And, look, sometimes you get people, you get them off guard and they do stupid things and guys break a tackle. We saw it, you know, with Houston play Buffalo. Hargraves got a chance to make a tackle, get off the field. He can't do it. Next thing you know, Houston's, you know, got the ball and they keep the drive alive. So, yeah, I think it's linked to the field goal kicker, and that distance is always tied with what he can make.
But aside from the field goal kicker, are they anticipating that the other team, let's say you're at your own 46, they get 12 yards, they're now at the 45, and now it's fourth and three, and they're going to go for it. Do they anticipate that the other team may actually go for it on fourth down?
Well, you tell me who we're playing. If it's Doug Peterson, they definitely anticipate it. If it's Pete Carroll, they may not. You know, I think a lot of that's where analytics doesn't really help you. That's where I wrote the column in The Athletic. It's all situational, right? You know, if it's Peterson, you know he's going for it. If it's the Baltimore Ravens, you've got to play four down defense at every part of the field. If you're playing somebody who's a little bit more conservative, you know, then, you know, you don't have to. And so it's all predicated on who you're playing.
Interesting.
And that third down call, so we're clear, that third down call should be reflective of that. You know, the thing you don't want to do on third and 15 is get called for defensive holding. That's the last thing you want to do. You know, you don't want to be grabbing somebody and pulling somebody. So you want to play a little bit more zone, and you don't want to be able to, you know, you don't want to get too much hand grabbing and all that. So that's why there's not a lot of man coverage on those third and longs, because nobody wants to get caught pulling and tugging.
NFC Championship follows the AFC Championship on Sunday. Kickoff 3:40 p.m. Pacific, 6:40 p.m. Eastern at Santa Clara. Niners, 7.5-point favorites over the Packers. Total is at, let's call it 46 consensus, though I do see a 46.5 at Circa. I see a 45.5 at CG in Las Vegas. Niners get here by virtue of their 27-10 win over the Minnesota Vikings this past Saturday. They were 7-point favorites. Was nip and tuck there in the first half, and I got the feeling, and I think Kyle Shanahan felt the same way based on what happened thereafter, that the Niners could really name their score if Jimmy Garoppolo just didn't really mess it up for them with the turnover. And we saw a subsequent drive in the second half where the Niners did nothing but run all the way down the field into the end zone. It really was all Niners in the second half and really won it going away after a nip-and-tuck first half. So the Niners get the home field. They, of course, first seed in the NFC playoffs. My NFC futures on the Niners still alive from before the playoffs began, about plus 113 and plus 123. Then there's the Green Bay Packers. The Packers got here by virtue of their 28-23 win over the Seahawks as 4.5-point closing favorites on Sunday. That game, as Michael, you and I discussed on Tuesday on a numbers game, is typical of every Seahawks game seemingly all year long, which is it's a one-score game. And the Seahawks, by the way, end up finishing the season 11-3 in one-score games, this being a three if you include the playoffs, this being the third. But the Seahawks fall behind, And then it's as if Pete Carroll says, well, Russell, go get us out of this hole. And Russell Wilson does Russell Wilson things, but it was too short in the end. And Green Bay holds on based on two huge third down conversions by Aaron Rodgers after Seattle elected to punt with just over 2 minutes left with all three of their timeouts in pocket. Michael Lombardi, we will start with you as there's only two games. We go around the horn. San Francisco, 7.5-point favorites, total 46. What do you think here?
Well, I mean, the last time they played, it really wasn't a close game. I mean, the Packers were 1-for-15 on third down. They had the ball 35 minutes, which to me is a complete remarkable analysis of how do you keep the ball for 35 minutes, yet you're 1-for-15 on third down and you have less than 200 yards. Somewhat remarkable, right? I mean, and, you know, they did a good job of holding the 49ers. The 49ers were only 2-for-4 in the red zone, and they scored 35 points. So, I mean, this is kind of a weird game. Obviously, I think it was one of those games that, you know, the score is probably indicative of how badly the Packers played and how dominant it was. And again, like all 49er games, I think this is a game that's going to come down to the ability of the 49ers front to dominate and pressure Aaron Rodgers from the inside against the guards, Jenkins, and against Billy Turner. You have to be able to pressure Rodgers inside, and they've got to take Davante Adams out. I think the limitations within the Packer offense, if they can't run the football, greatly favors the 49ers. And I think this is a game between Kyle Shanahan and Mike Pettine. Guys know each other really well. We're on the staff. LaFleur was on the staff. I mean, there's so much familiarity to what everybody does here. I'm going to go with Kyle, and I'm going to lay the points here.
That point about Davante Adams to me is everything. Like, he was the offense for the Packers, and it would just seem to me that the Niners would try to take him out of that. Wide receivers, no one else had more than one reception against the Seahawks. By the way, that game that you're referring to, of course, between the Niners and the Packers earlier this season, 37-8 in favor.
It should have been 37-0, Gil, if you remember. There was a phantom call in the end zone at the end of the first half on the third and
right.
Do you remember when Rodgers, they called two penalties on Richard Sherman, I believe, in the end zone, where they didn't even show the replay.
That's right.
Because it was such a bullcrap call.
Bullcrap.
And they gave them the touchdown because they, you know, who knows why they gave them the touchdown. But that game should have been 37-0, or 37-3 at worst.
Yeah, we talked about that the next day, how there was no replay that we even got to see. But 37-8 was the final. It was week 12. It was a primetime game. Rodgers threw for 104 yards. He was sacked 5 times. As Michael said, less than 200 yards of total offense. It was 198. Green Bay, as Michael said, 1-of-15 on third downs. There was not a game in the NFL this year that had a worse third down statistic than that. Now, that's a double-edged sword, right? Because you can say, if you're a Packer backer in this, you could say, well, it can't be that bad again. On the other hand, if you choose to view that as reflective of what's going to happen here moving forward, that's a different story. George Kittle, by the way, doing Kittle things in that game, 6-for-129 and a touchdown. Mikey.
Yeah, Gil, the thing was when the Packers finally scored, they went right to Kittle and had a big play and answered him, and that was really the game. I agree with Michael. I think that, you know, in this game, the Packers won in the divisional round. There was no pass rush from Seattle. They're going to have to face a team that's going to put pressure on them almost every down. And I simply don't think, and I said this early in the year, that this Packers defense is very good. I think that San Francisco will do just about whatever they want to do here. Outside of it, Garoppolo has a horrible game. Now, is that possible? It's possible, but I don't think it's very likely. I like San Francisco a lot in this spot, Gil, and I'll lay the points here. And I want to ask Michael a question related to the game in Green Bay last weekend. Michael, that face mask that really wasn't a face mask against Clowney, where they eventually got together, and you always say when officials, three or more officials get together, they're talking about what they didn't see, and then they came up with he grabbed the opening. Well, he didn't. He pulled him down from the back outside of the helmet. Here's my question, Michael. Uncle Brent said on the show this week what they ought to do is get rid of reviewing pass interference calls and be able to review face mask calls. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, look, face mask calls are easy to review. It's either did or it didn't. It's like, you know, we got to be able to see it. And sometimes they react to what they think they see. And usually that's wrong, as I've said many times. When they react to something, you know, it's usually wrong. So, yeah, I mean, I wish we could do that. I wish we could speed it up so that they could do it and handle it easier.
By the way, weather for these games in San Francisco, sunny and 57-degree high in Santa Clara on Sunday, and the Kansas City Chiefs game, much like the Packers game last week, no precipitation, 0% chance, 22 degrees will feel like it's 14 degrees, but could be much worse for all intents and purposes this time of year. So no inclement weather anyway, just cold in Kansas City. Todd, your thoughts here.
I think you have to look at San Francisco and possibly also the under 46.5. I know they're betting it up a little bit, but, you know, I noticed something about the Niners. You had a little bit of jittery Jimmy there last week where he threw one pick and he threw a couple other balls that, you know, he's probably the luckiest quarterback of all time. He gets more balls that should be picked and the defense drops them. You know, those expected interception ratio, he has a hell of a BABIP or a lucky.
Yeah.
He has a lucky BABIP on those. But I noticed in the second half, as I'm sure you guys did, that they didn't throw the ball at all. They just said, we're willing to get six-yard chunks. We'll just keep getting six-yard chunks, and we'll win this game easily because we know Kirk Cousins can't do anything, and he's under siege every time he drops back to pass. So I think that Green Bay earned 3 points in the last game. I mean, is Green Bay's offense really told us that it's the usual Aaron Rodgers tremendous Green Bay offense? It doesn't look like that the last couple of weeks or even all season for that matter. So I don't see Green Bay scoring a lot of points here. And if San Francisco gets a lead, I have a feeling Mr. Shanahan's going to go right back to handing the ball off, taking 5 yards and punting the ball. We could see a scoreless fourth quarter here, and it could be, you know, 30-7 going to the fourth quarter, and it stays under because they're just willing to run the ball the whole rest of the game. So I would certainly be careful if it's a Niner. If Niners are up big in the second half, you might want to definitely be looking at under, and I would lean to the under, and I also lean to San Francisco.
Garoppolo was 11 of 19 in the game last week against Minnesota, only 11 completed passes, 131 yards, one touchdown, one pick, was sacked twice, but, you know, you don't need to. Like we see with Ryan Tannehill, you don't need to win football games, you know, by conventional ways or what people would deem conventional when you've got other strengths in your football team. They held the ball for 38 minutes and 27 seconds, did the Niners, against the Vikings. They held the Vikings to 2 of 12 on third down, held the Vikings to 147 total yards, only 21 on the ground. Niners defense flies around. So as far as... Yeah, go ahead, Todd.
Good deal. I just wanted to ask Mike one other thing. You know, I really love the segments you do on A Numbers Game with Gil on Tuesdays, Mike. And you talked about missed field goals a lot being a major problem for the other team. And when you said that missed field goals score, you know, very high ratio, is that just because the field position is so good for the offense? So, for instance, if a team misses a 47-yard field goal, the other team gets it at the 37-yard line, they're only 63 yards away from a touchdown. Are you saying that after a missed field goal, the reason they're scoring so much is because they're getting that great field position? Or is it something that, you know, momentum, meaning any other drive that started at the 37 wouldn't score as much as a missed field goal drive starting at the 37? Or are you just saying go ahead.
I definitely think momentum carries on to it, but I also think it's a turnover, and the team celebrates it like a turnover. And then the offense can get going a little bit. And I think when you look at the teams, you know, that like, for example, when we take, you know, Kansas City this week going into the game, they rank 25th in the league and their opponents miss field goals, you know. So, and then when you look at Tennessee's 23rd. So even though they're ninth, Tennessee's ninth in turnovers, their opponent's 23rd in missed field goals. So that kind of balances it out. And Kansas City's seventh in turnovers, but their opponents are 25. So they don't really net a huge advantage. San Francisco's fourth and 13th in terms of turnovers, fourth missed field goals, they rank 13th. And then Green Bay, when you look at what they are, they're third and 10th. So both teams really are kind of similar in the field goal. Last time they played Kansas City, you know, both teams missed extra points. Both teams missed field goals. And ultimately, the special teams of Kansas City, when you watch that tape, I mean, you can watch it 1,000 times and you're going to ask yourself the question, how did we lose that game?
I think that's a great point about the missed field goals, though, the way that you couched it there at the end, Michael, of, you know, it's not something that broadcasters talk about in the in-game play-by-play broadcast. It's not something that is discussed on pregame shows, conventional pregame shows on network TV. But what you were describing, sort of the basketball equivalent, this is kind of a dirty analogy, but Aaron Schatz and I used to joke about free throw defense, right? Where we don't ever talk about how fortunate or unfortunate teams get on just the conversion rate of the opposing team on free throws. We don't process it. Our brain doesn't process that. And it does mitigate what you're saying on the field goals of the opposing teams. It does mitigate the turnover stat to some degree. Well, yes, they're doing well on turnovers, but they haven't really gotten the best of it, say, on this particular thing where teams actually do convert field goals all the time against them. So they haven't had as many opportunities. Just one of the things that I'm assuming you talk about on the Lombardi line every Saturday and Sunday. That's great stuff that you don't hear typically.
So, Gil,
I think it matters. It matters tremendously because, you know, it's a net effect of how many times you're really gaining the football. And if you don't count missed field goals into the turnover ratio, it can be really deceiving. I mean, Dallas this year, for example, was the number one team in the opponent's missing field goals, you know, and that they were only 18th in turnovers, you know. And so they had a lot of extra chances. Whereas Philadelphia, you know, they weren't great at field goal kicking. They weren't great at creating turnovers, 25th. And they got 32. They find 32nd in the National Football League and missed field goals by their opponents.
Yeah, and Dallas two seasons ago was tremendous in one score games and not so much. It regressed, as you might predict, this year. So maybe Dallas, through a couple different lenses, wasn't nearly as good as many thought they were different times of this season.
Bill, you know how a lot of handicappers on season win totals will look at what the turnover ratio was the year before and see, and that's kind of what you're talking about right there,
right,
is the fortunateness of the team. So if a team was like plus 20 in turnovers, they're really not that good of a team. And now here's a hidden turnover stat that Mike Lombardi's talking about that we really should be looking at if we're going to be doing that same analysis next year, saying, hey, a team was plus 20 in turnovers, but hey, they also got, you know, the Cowboys also got all these missed field goals too. They're really not that good. But Mike, if I understand you correctly, you're basically saying if a team misses a field goal and now they're starting, the other team starts at the 37, they're going to do better on that drive than if they were just to get a kickoff return to the 37.
Get a punt return to the 37, you know, and that's it. Like Baltimore, for example, here's a perfect example. Baltimore is sixth in the National Football League in turnovers. They are fifth in missed field goals by their opponent. That's significant, right? They're getting extra possessions every time they turn around. They're never losing possession.
And my brain would say, Todd, that regardless if you want to debate momentum or not, missed field goals, generally speaking, will give you field position that much closer to the opposing end zone, right? Because you spot it right where the kicker misses it, not at the line of scrimmage. So it's really shorter fields more often than not. And in analytics, you know, with every down and distance from the opposing goal line, there is an expected point value. So if you really wanted to get wonky and nerdy with it, that's really what's at the root of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, but it would be interesting. It would be interesting to do a comparison of teams starting at the 35 at their own 35 after a missed field goal versus teams starting at a 35 for any other reason, and see how if there was actually a momentum factor to a missed field goal. Be interesting.
It would, but it
Isaac did that. The guy who won the Circa, he computed all this. Isaac did all this. This is what Isaac was doing with his database. I mean, he's ahead of everybody, and that's why he was so good at being able to handicap games, and that's why he won the Circa contest. I mean, he would send me his breakdown every week, and it was all based on the things we talked about, who's good in the middle eight. I mean, I love now how Chris Fowler calls it the middle eight. I love that.
Every time he says it, I think of you. I'm like, oh, Lombardi.
Yeah, never quotes it. You know, never quotes it. And then I heard him start talking about 4-point plays too. So, I mean, I think that's really the number. I mean, that's the core of the game, right? And the people that are handicapping these games the best understand what really matters in the game. And I think the Tennessee team is a complete it's a complete dossier of what really matters in the game. And everybody's focused on Henry, but no one talks about how good they have been in short yardage defense. The Patriots have the ball first and goal at the one. They don't get in. Baltimore is the best fourth down team in football, 10 for 10. Can't get on fourth and one twice. Both times those points turn into touchdowns both times. The things that matter, if you study that, it'll lead you to what the teams are really good. These other numbers, I don't know, the Aikman ratings or all that, like, I'm not sure they have all this stuff in it. This is the stuff that matters in football.
Well, this is the stuff that baseball has figured out through analytics for decades now. It's all in the public domain, but we just don't quite have the same true reflection of skill set thing in football, and this is sort of a dabbling in it. Todd, my question would be, why didn't Isaac, because I thought that's your buddy, why didn't he send you that stuff?
I guess I'm not, important enough.
Apparently not. Jesus, that's your buddy.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm important. I think what he was, I think he read the book. I think he's smart, and he took a lot of the things from the book, from reading Coach Walsh, reading my book, and I think he put it into a formula, and he came out with his power rankings. Because remember, this is no different than scouting. We're trying to eliminate games. This is why picking playoff games are hard, because you can't eliminate any game, mm-hmm. right? You know, every week you need to eliminate games, not find teams you like. You got to eliminate games, and you have to have a disciplined way to do it. If you don't eliminate, you're really, I tell people the story all the time when Tom Corcoran was driving over down a road in Oklahoma, and he went right to find Mickey Mantle. That's lucky. That's hitting the lottery. Whereas in scouting, you have to eliminate people. You got to eliminate players, not find them.
Maybe we'll get Isaac on for the Super Bowl prop show. Maybe we'll get him on, see if he has any thoughts.
By the way, Steele, it's not like I know the guy that well. He just came up to me.
No,
I'm
just joshing. I was kidding, for God's sakes.
By the way, he is a bright guy. If you talk to him for like 15 minutes, because he's in financial stuff,
yes.
And I used to be in financial stuff, and so we talked about that, you can tell right away that this guy is a bright kid.
Yeah, I spoke with him for about 10 minutes. I enjoyed him very much. I could tell very quickly he was a smart kid. For sure. As always, guys, support for today's show comes from Bookmaker.eu, an industry leader for close to 30 years. Pro players consider them a must because they're first to post odds, take the highest limits, and pride themselves on never having kicked out a winning player. That is huge. Bookmaker's a high-volume sports book best suited for the sophisticated player, also caters to large recreational players, and their motto is always is where the lines originate, because chances are the sports book at which you've been betting follows their lines. Pretty damn good chance, as a matter of fact. And right now, if you visit bookmaker.eu/gill, that's bookmaker.eu/gill, you'll claim your exclusive 100% welcome bonus of up to $300. That's bookmaker.eu/gill to join and claim your welcome bonus of up to $300 right now. You will not regret it. Betting the only way I know how, the indispensable, bookmaker.eu. Check it out. Thank me later. Okay. So here's how I'm betting this, gentlemen, because we're not going to do our final two questions because obviously there's only two games. But I'll just like to throw out for people, here's how I'm betting it. One, I have Niners futures in pocket to win the NFC. So because I have those, it does change the way I'm betting it. I will bet Green Bay plus the points and try to hit both bets. That's how I'll do it. I'm not going to, I don't know if I'm going to, I could just sit on my San Francisco futures, but I think that's a lot of points also. So I think I'll do that. If I didn't have those NFC futures, I would probably just do one teaser. And for me, it would probably be teasing San Francisco down. And I know this goes against what most of you guys are saying, but I'd probably tease Tennessee upwards to 13.5, whatever I could get it at based on the number. So if it got to 8, for instance, I would absolutely tease Tennessee. I'm curious what, if any, bets any of you gentlemen will have. Mike Palm, what are you doing?
I'm going to tease both favorites down, essentially to a pick and a teaser. And then I'm going to play the under in the San Francisco game that Todd alluded to as well. I think that I just don't know that Rodgers is going to be able to put up that many points with the pressure that the 49ers are going to be able to get on him. And I know 1-for-15 is probably an aberration, but I don't see that San Francisco is going to be able to put the – or that Green Bay is going to be able to put the ball in the end zone against this defense. I think it's a little high. That total. I would have made this total closer to 42, 42 and a half.
Yeah, I'm with you, and that's why I'm not like 100% sure I'll bet Green Bay plus the points and try to hit both of them. I may just stand pat on my Niners futures. I really haven't completely made up my mind there. Todd, what are you betting? How are you betting?
Before I say that, Mike, you might also want to look at, instead of teasing them down, you might want to look at the money line parlay and see if it's better than the teaser odds, you know?
Yes, I will do that. I will do that. I'm going to wait to see where these numbers go. I think we'll be set on 7 with Kansas City. I'm thinking that maybe the Green Bay will come down to 7-2 and the money line will go down with it.
Yeah. I would think what I'm going to be leaning to the under, as I mentioned before. I think there's a decent chance that San Francisco could be ahead by, you know, a decent amount late and want to just run the ball out like they did against Minnesota last week. So I'll probably be leaning to the under there. And I may take a shot with Kansas City here because I just think Kansas City is much better and this could get out of hand. So I'll probably be leaning on that. And of course, there's always the chance I'll just be in gaming like usual.
Yeah, by the way, the money line parlay at this juncture would not be a more favorable bet.
Well, it would depend on how many point teaser it is, right?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is for that, you would be laying minus, let's say it's minus 120 on a 6-point teaser. You're laying more than that right now if you do the money line.
Yeah, it's about minus 130 for the money line parlay.
Yeah. Michael Lombardi, I don't generally ask you this, but if you were a betting man, what would you bet here?
You know, I mean, if I were a betting man, I thought Kansas City was a Super Bowl team starting with the trip to Mexico City and have played like one. I agree that, you know, they're tough. The Tennessee's had this unbelievable thing, but when I watched that game, I can't believe that Tennessee can really do anything more than what they did, you know, and I thought they were fortunate. My instincts would tell me to bet Kansas City, but without Chris Jones, I'm a little bit nervous about that, because the one thing about Tennessee is they're, even if they're down early, they're not going to change who they are. They're going to throw it. They're going to run it with this big guy, and he's hard to tackle, and it's going to be a problem. So, you know, if I did anything, I think San Francisco, I think Green Bay, the pressure is going to get to Aaron Rodgers. It may not happen in the first quarter, but it's going to happen through the game. And when they take Adams out of the game, then what's going to happen? And I think the Niners are just too good.
Yeah, Michael means the physical pressure, not the mental pressure when talking about Aaron Rodgers, obviously.
Right, yes, exactly.
And then the final thing would be, it sounds like everybody here, I mean, I still like Tennessee a little. I bet Tennessee, but I think Kansas City gets there. It sounds like everybody thinks it's a San Francisco-Kansas City Super Bowl. Is that also the matchup you want to see? San Francisco-Kansas City, Michael Lombardi?
You know, I think that would be the best matchup because, you know, a great defensive line against a great quarterback, a great running game. I mean, it's got all the elements of a great Super Bowl, so who wouldn't want that, right? Yeah,
I think that's what I'd like to see.
As we know in sports, what we want and what we get are two different things.
Yeah.
And if Tennessee can keep winning playing the 72 Dolphins style of football, God bless them.
Here's the thing. I wouldn't mind seeing Tennessee in. They've been very good to me during the playoffs. I absolutely don't want to see Green Bay in there because I just think they are a paper tiger at 14-3. With apologies to Green Bay fans. I just don't think they're that good of a football team. Mike and Todd, same thing. You want to see San Francisco, Kansas City as well?
I do for sure. I mean, you could have a full prop sheet just on the matchup of the two tight ends.
Yeah, so true. Todd, same?
I would agree. I mean, of course, if it's a football game, I'll be betting it regardless of who's playing, whether it's Incarnate Word going up against Cal Baptist. I'll be interested in watching it and in-gaming it.
You love Incarnate Word. Gentlemen, thank you. We've done all we can do. Mikey Palm, Todd Wishnev, thank you as always. We'll talk to you for the Vegas Lifestyle Show next week. So do your lists on restaurants in Vegas and whatever else it is that you find entertaining in Las Vegas. We can go in all kinds of tentacles. So do that. We'll do that next week. And Michael Lombardi, host of the Lombardi Line at VSiN, also writes for The Athletic. Of course, the podcast is the GM Shuffle with Adnan Virk, and Gridiron Genius is the book. Michael, thank you as always, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday on a numbers game.
Thank you, Gil.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you all. Good luck with all your bets this weekend. Championship week in the NFL. Thank you so much for listening.
The cat sat on the mat.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.